actually practices. So we're at the very point where here you've got this two choices of two graphs, and now you're going back over your notes to kind of look at what?
Yeah, you're going back over what we call the session, which is your controlled precognition session. These are bunches of paper where you've been writing your impressions that have been channeled from your superconscious to your conscious mind, in the metaphor that I use anyway. And there's words and pictures, and there's little ideograms, which are these little symbols that you write down to indicate each of these different eight elements that are in these graphs. Yeah, you could use the ones in the book. You can make up your own. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It just, as long as they work for you.
Yeah.
And so let's say we have one graph here on the left-hand side that is all about, it says it has animals and humans, it has water, and the other graph says it's all human-made structures. So you have to go through and you have to analytically say, how much of this session represents something that seems like animal or human or feels like it intuitively animal or human, and how much feels like, if any, feel like a structure, right? And so maybe you choose the animal-human, and maybe you just also felt a little bit of water, you know? So remember, when you were doing the session, you didn't know what the choices were, right? You might have come up with all sky and space, you know, information, and there's no sky and space in either of these graphs. So then you would say, I don't know what to do, and you would probably just say digit.
So all you had was a number.
All you have is an eight-digit number.
Eight-digit number. That's all you had.
Well, that and the working relationship between your superconscious and your conscious mind.
Right. That's a big one.
Right. Yeah. But in terms of what a videographer could see, you took an eight-digit number, you wrote it down, and then you started doing squiggles and shapes and words.
And you have maybe five, six, seven, eight pages. Of these squiggles.
Yeah. So now you go over and you decide, okay, fine, I'm going to choose one of these. And let's say you choose the animal-human one. And then the website puts a pop-up window and says, you know, are you sure? And then you say, yes, I'm sure. And then it's going to choose randomly one of the two photos that have been represented by the graphs to show you as the correct image. And so it shows you a photo and it says you're either correct or not. And then the most important step of this whole process is learning from that. So if you're incorrect, it's extremely valuable to look back over your session. And it turns out to be a picture of a machine, right? So that's all human-made structures. So you didn't win. You weren't correct with your animal-human and water thing. So you have to look at that and say, okay, now, how did I get this wrong? Was I just completely off base, or were there elements that I misinterpreted? And it's the being wrong, which is so important for the learning process.
So there you don't get depressed because you're wrong. You use it and you just keep learning. It's like making a mistake on your scales that you were playing. You just go back and you kind of do it again.
Yeah. And you not only learn about how to do it right, but you also learn about yourself. And
yes,
this is the piece that I love about this practice, is it becomes almost a mystical or a self-help practice where you start to go, like, there's a thing that I just love that I just recently discovered, which is that just before something important comes out, I write the word yellow. And I always thought that I knew that that was true. But just recently I was talking with someone and I realized, oh, it's like a highlighter. It's a joke.
Oh.
It's a joke from my superconscious, like, saying, look, here's a highlighter pen.
Your superconscious used a metaphor.
Yeah.
It gave you a metaphor.
It said yellow, highlighter.
I love it. Joseph Campbell would love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. And so you learn these funny things about yourself that are just, they're delightful. And you get connected to yourself over time. It's like you get a feeling that your future self is trying to give you some information in some kind of way that you have to interpret. And it's a fun game.
It just sounds wonderful. And so now, how does this translate then? How often would you suggest you go? One would go onto the website and practice this or use this tool?
So a couple things about that. First of all, we have a practice version and a test version. And the difference is the practice version is it doesn't go into your official score. Mm-hmm. Some people are competing for the Hall of Fame on the website. They need to do, once they're ready with practice and they have the drill down, they need to do test trials, and that it makes them eligible for the Hall of Fame after a while. But
and is that recorded then in some sort of database?
Yeah.
So that you're keeping track of that part, And that helps with your research.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Yeah, for me, that's the big payoff besides helping people understand how awesome
this
is.
But those of us that would just do it as not the test one, but just practice, that's not recorded, and we just are doing it for ourselves.
Well, we're certainly going to record it, but you're not eligible for the Hall of Fame, and we won't write papers about it. We'll just look at it because it's interesting, right?
Okay.
So the other thing that it's important to say about this is that everyone has a different rate at which they should be doing this. And so it's actually, we put a warning in the book, we put a warning on the website, because if you're mentally unstable at all, or if you have any kind of family history of mental illness, you have to be careful that you don't get kind of delusional, because it will be the case that at some point you will sketch out something that very much looks like the picture you see. And as you go on, that will happen more and more. And it really changes your perspective. And if you start to think, oh, I'm omniscient, I can predict the future all the time, or, oh, I'm God, this can really mess you up, not only in your controlled precognition practice, but who cares? It can mess you up in your life, right?
Yeah.
So you have to be careful and notice, you know, am I going on obsessively? Has it become like a gambling addiction? It can to people.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I can see that. So there is that warning, and you would suggest that then you would stop doing that, and you would go find a therapist you really trust and work with whatever that issue is, or whatever issues you might have.
That's right.
And
come back when you're ready,
back later.
If it's safe, or or don't come back.
Yeah, exactly.
Know? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So that's all really exciting and fun. Now, how could that, after we've been doing that for a while, let's say we check in once a week and then maybe twice a week if that feels comfortable, and we just kind of go with what feels comfortable.
Yeah, then maybe once a day or a couple times a day. Yeah, whatever's comfortable.
Whatever is comfortable and not obsessive.
Yeah.
And not getting like tracked out like, oh, I won or didn't win and get depressed about not winning or whatever.
Yeah.
No, you're learning.
Right.
So what about translating any of that into our lives?
Yes. Okay, so here's the cool thing. Both people who are extremely good at precognition spontaneously already in their lives, and in fact, that group of people often contacts me and says, what can I do to get this under control? Because it's actually uncomfortable, right? Both that group of people and people who don't have those experiences at all, both of them, I propose, although I haven't tested this, I propose can have a better experience by controlling their precognition practice, sitting down at a certain time of day, doing this. I think that gives the mind an ability to sort of center this information that's coming in.
So you're saying this is my time out for this, and other than that, I'm not going to just don't bother me with this stuff, super consciousness or whatever. Just we're not shaking hands here.
Well, as a first step to getting this under control and making yourself feel comfortable with it and not creepy about it.
Right.
If you feel creepy. Yeah, so if you start to feel comfortable on the website and you feel like you have a good score and you feel like your ability, the feedback is showing you that your ability is decent, there's a couple things you might want to do. So one is you could become a consultant that uses this ability for corporations or organizations that are trying to mitigate future possibilities. So many people are already doing that. The other is that for yourself, you can, for your own life, you can use this ability kind of like this. You could write a bunch of questions on pieces of paper about your life. You can put them in a hat, and then you draw a question only after you've done one of these things. So it's like, I do my whole session, I don't know what question I'm answering, and then I draw a question out of the hat, and I see what question I was answering.
Right.
Now, the reason that sounds so backwards and strange and too complicated, and why don't you just sit down and write out the answer, is because we are so immersed in our own lives, it's extremely hard to let that information come through if you already know what the question is. So it's like a trick to get your conscious mind to kind of let go,
get out of the way.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking up like a brief exercise, your best future choice, which is right in the book. And this is where you give a whole way of doing this practice that you're actually asking maybe several questions, and then how to work with that with a friend.
Yeah.
And that was really very helpful. So good. That's right in the book.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that exercise.
Yeah. That's a good one. A brief exercise, your best future choice. It's great. It was just great to read that one.
Cool.
And you can actually improve your abilities and test them and all sorts of things. But I'm thinking when you talk about your analytical mind and your cognitive mind and then your precognitive mind, you talk about doing a handshake at the very beginning.
Oh, yeah.
When you kind of get these two parts of yourself to cooperate or collaborate.
Yes. I think it's really important, and I think it has a lot to do with creativity as well. I think when people train themselves to do precognition, whether they use this website or another means, or whether they use the book or another means, they're also tapping into where we think creativity comes from. And I think both of them, precognition and creativity, rely on this really important relationship between what has been called the superconscious, and in the New Age world, I think is often called the higher self, which is this part of our non-conscious mind that can wisely guide us towards appropriate paths for us, right? And so this superconscious and this conscious sort of egoic mind that thinks it knows what's going on all the time, but is clearly and demonstrably incorrect plenty of those times, those two have to have a nice relationship. The reason is that they have different skills. So neither one is bad or wrong. But the superconscious has the skill of processing in a parallel processing way, a lot of information, and then coming up with some information that you wouldn't normally in your conscious mind necessarily know. And your conscious mind has the skill of staying on task and saying, it's a good editor. No, no, that doesn't make sense. Yeah, no, yeah. Right? And so those two pieces
Fills
in the blank. Right. I see something red, it's round. Oh, it's an apple. Instead of it's red, it's round. It's maybe a red balloon. It could be a sphere of, you know, jello that's red. And we don't know, right? So leaving things open is sort of the job of the superconscious, getting all sorts of associations. And the job of the conscious mind is closing and saying, you know, this is what's happening. It likes to tell stories. It likes to come to a conclusion. But both of those things are necessary for both creativity and precognition. And the handshake is just something I invented because people need to get it that these two things are important. You don't dismiss one or the other. They work together. And the handshake is to say, superconscious, I will do my job. I will do the things that I am good at, and I'm going to leave the other things to you and the conscious mind, and I'm going to do my job, and I will do the things I'm good at, and I'll leave the other things to you, and now let's shake on it. That handshake is really important.
So I want to ask you about, like, how accepted is this in scientific fields and with other scientists?
Well, it depends. So the overall answer is a lot of scientists think it's pretty sketchy.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the overall answer. But I want to give credit to many scientists who are open-minded enough. And it's often the scientists who are at the higher levels of academia who are already full professors or maybe at the tier one institutions who have contacted me. Either they're researching this kind of thing and they don't want anyone to know, so I'm not allowed to say their names, or they are very interested in this work and they just are following up on it. At the highest level, scientists know that no one understands the way things work, really.
I'm here with Julia Mossbridge, and she is a co-author with Teresa Chung of The Premonition Code, The Science of Precognition, How Sensing the Future Can Change Your Life. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Julia Mossbridge, the co-author of The Premonition Code. And Julia, I would love to talk about time. I know that
me too.
Goody. Because it's such a fascinating subject, and I know that you've been studying it. And tell us about what are you finding out about time, and what should we know about time?
Well, I've studied time in the nervous, or I shouldn't say time. Let's say how events are processed in the nervous system over time. Let's call it that. And how events are processed in perception over time. So I've been studying that for about a decade. And what I have learned from my own experiments and those of others is that when people talk about time, they're talking about different things.
Ah.
There's probably like 20 different ideas about what time is when people think that they're agreeing. And so there's the order of things. So A comes before B. So that's something that people say that's what they mean by time. And other people say it's the duration of something. How long have we been talking here together? Some people say it is a physical property of the universe. So time is somehow out there and exists independent of people who perceive events in time. And some people say that's hogwash, and it's only humans or only conscious beings, let's say, who experience time or any events in time. So those are sort of...
So like maybe animals don't experience time?
Well, some people...
Say they do.
Right. I mean, so like how are we going to know? So what it comes down to is, because I'm an empiricist, I'm not a philosopher, I'm not a theoretical scientist in any way, I'm an empiricist. I want to do an experiment that says, well, how are we going to figure this out? And so you can do some experiments about time perception. And those are the kind of things that I've been involved with and have done, worked with other people on. And you can do experiments in the physics of time. And I've just started doing those kind of experiments. And that's about it. So there's experiments in the perception of time and experiments in the physics of time. And everything else is kind of guesswork. So I live in the world of empiricism where those are my choices if I want to learn more. And so what I've learned from those choices is that the brain has many, many clocks and they're not all synchronized.
Ah.
So the processes that are in our mind that produce conscious experience or that are related to conscious experience, if you want to be agnostic about the direction of that kind of causality between the brain and the mind, which I do, those processes are working all the time to try to present a story to us that is the best possible story of all the inputs it's getting. So that combines something sensible about what's going on in the auditory system with something sensible about what's going on in the visual system, and also in the somatosensory system, what we're feeling. And it's creating a story that integrates those. But it's doing a lot of work to do that. It's not like there's one clock, and then when information comes in, it gets stamped. You know, this is the time it came in. We better present it to consciousness. No, it is a reconstruction of reality. And you can see that through experiments like those that I've done and that other people have done, showing that there's these illusions where, for instance, there was an article that just came out from Caltech about one of these illusions called the rabbit illusion, where you can show, for instance, two flashes of light, but if you offer three sounds that beep, 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 and the first and the last are correlated at the same time, are given at the same time as the flash, you'll create three flashes. You'll swear that you saw three flashes because at the end and at the beginning, the brain has decided, okay, what's going on here is there's a flash that comes with a beep. So when that one time in the middle where I didn't see a flash, that was probably a mistake, so I'm going to make a flash. And you retroactively...
So you make it up.
You make it up. So it presents to the conscious mind, here's the most comprehensible story that I can think of. It's wrong, but it's the most comprehensible story. So we're doing that all the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
And this is what makes it so difficult to really communicate with one another, because we're making things up from our own experience.
Yeah.
It's just crazy making.
It is.
But I know that you could say something about time travel.
Sure.
So let's talk about time travel. I mean, that like gets real sci-fi, but
I used to get so mad when I was a kid and a budding scientist, because I thought, now the most sensible thing that every scientist should be working on in the world is a time machine. Because You know, who cares about cancer? Who cares about anything else? Because if you build a time machine, you can go back and solve all that. Anything that you neglected, you can go back and fix. So do the time machine first and then fix all the world's problems.
And we have all sorts of TV series and movies all about this. It's so fascinating, and they're very popular.
Yeah, and I've watched them all.
Yeah, me too.
And I can say that what I think is most likely is that we will recognize that informational time travel, or mental time travel, is the first kind of time travel that we will invent. And that you could count, for instance, precognition as mental time travel or informational time travel.
Because you're going in the future, you're precog of a future event, or maybe you're also going back to, can you change the past?
Right. This is a great question. So once you start thinking that way, you start to think, now, wait a minute, is this a receptive sort of sensory process where I'm getting information from the future? Or is my future self actively, like a motor process, sending information back in time? And the answer is question mark. And is there any difference between those two? If you start thinking time symmetrically, where a particular, if you think of dropping a water in a very still pond, you'll see ripples go out in all directions. Now, our conscious mind wants it to be that we're only going to look in one direction at those ripples. But based on the information that we know, at least scientifically, about precognition, it appears that our unconscious minds are looking in both directions. So it's possible that the physical world, and I would say this is my hypothesis that I cannot prove or even test, but nonetheless, I work on the hypothesis that the physical world might be time symmetric. And there's evidence from physics that that might be the case. But that the mental world, in terms of conscious awareness, is time asymmetric, which means information seems to be going, events seem to be moving in only one direction.
Well, that takes me to a quote in your book that you use, and you have several really great quotes. And this is from the Oxford Handbook of Philosophy of Time by Ludwig Boltzmann, and he says, "For the universe, the two directions of time are indistinguishable, just as in space, there is no up and down."
Right.
So on some level, and maybe quantum level, there is no future or past. It's indistinguishable.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you say the quantum level, I mean, it's interesting. If you read about the transactional interpretation of quantum mechanics, especially Ruth Kastner's work at the University of Maryland, she talks about how what we call the past and future, what we sort of incorrectly call the past and future, are conspiring to create the present moment, to determine what the present moment, will be or is. And that physical idea is based on quantum mechanics, an interpretation of quantum mechanics that actually solves a lot of problems that quantum mechanics, the standard interpretation, produces. So this is it's a novel interpretation that I think is really powerful. And it poses this kind of, I guess she calls it, Ruth Kastner calls it quantum land, this place where space and time, there's outside of space and time, where transactions are happening between what we call the past and future, but are really outside of space and time.
So normally, or in our everyday reality, we think of time just as the past.
Yeah.
You know, all right, this happened and this happened. It's kind of historical,
yeah,
so to speak. But you're saying that this scientist is also pulling in this other information that we normally would think has yet to happen,
yeah,
but it actually is present as well.
It's outside of space-time. It's just not present in space-time.
It's just not present in space-time.
Right.
So not everything is in space-time.
Well, you can decide what you want to call reality. You can say it's only stuff in space-time. And some physicists say, all I care about is stuff in space-time, and that's fine. And you could say it's everything, which includes things outside of space-time. So it depends on how you want to define reality.
So there could be multiple realities. You know, I mean, it just opens up everything. It does. And writers have been writing this for a long time.
And mystics have been saying it for a long time. Exactly. And science is slowly catching on per usual.
Exactly. All of this is so exciting. And so where do you see your work going at the moment? What are you most excited about right now?
What I'm most excited about is training positive precogs, creating a movement of positive precogs in the world. And combining that with artificial intelligence to create a situation where our world is drawing on all of our abilities and is not afraid to use our extended minds to function and to live better lives.
Oh, that's really exciting. And then this is where people can really tap into the website. And on the website, there is a community forum where people can really connect with one another. And I also want to say on the website that it's a place, as we've kind of demonstrated in a little bit, that you can test and develop your own precognitive abilities with these controlled precognition practices. It also has links to relevant research. It has lists of events with you, Dr. Julia Mossbridge, and with Teresa Chung and other scientists and experts speaking on precognition, and also webinars. It's just full of all sorts of wonderful things, and you can really practice this on the website. You really set it up so well for people to practice their precog abilities and to get better at it.
Thanks.
So I want to thank you for being on New Dimensions today, Julia.
I loved it. Thank you.
Me too. I've been speaking with Dr. Julia Mossbridge. She is the co-author with Teresa Chung of The Premonition Code, The Science of Precognition, How Sensing the Future Can Change Your Life. And if you want to know more, you can go to the website, thepremonitioncode.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3658.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org. And just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Talley, author of Breaking Up with Busy, Real Life Solutions for Overscheduled Women. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about how we can find effective solutions to our time-strapped lives.
This is Free Voices at CJSF 90.1 FM, talking to you about
Eagle Nation Universal Production Society. We are 10 board of directors, and we are rejoicing for world history. Our show is based on true stories, musical and storytelling, and role-playing, silent crimes broken, very interesting series of show.
And a lot of in-depth oral tradition. We play every Thursday from 3 to 4. Come and join us.